But first to the UK. Ian Dunt is columnist for iNews, co-host of the Origin Story podcast, and our regular on All Matters Westminster. And our topic du jour, the continued fallout from the murder of Henry Nowak. Ian, just remind us who Henry Nowak is and why his death has become such a flashpoint for race relations in the UK.
He was a young teenager student in Southampton. He was walking home one day when he was murdered by a Sikh man. It's annoying to have to state the fact that he is white and that his assailant was Sikh, but that's obviously basically core to what played out afterwards. And in fact, you kind of knew it, by the way. Like, as you heard that this was one of those crime stories that had become political, some deep, horrible part of your brain already knew the race of the people involved, because the only stories that are taken up from crime and turned into a politics story are now those that suit the far right in Britain, reform, restore, these people that are trying to argue that whites are a victimized group. And they have now taken the narrative of what took place after that murder to use it to bolster their pre-existing political ideology. What took place is that the assailant called up the police and said, "I've just been racially assaulted. This white guy tried to tear off my turban." So when the police turned up, it was dark. He was wearing a blue hoodie. Henry Nowak had been stabbed, but they couldn't see any of that because it was the nighttime. And for about 1 to 2 minutes, they assumed the story about a racial assault was true. They handcuffed Henry Nowak. And so in his final moments, he was handcuffed and being accused of racism. That was then very quickly changed. However, he did, in the video that exists of this, say, "I can't breathe." And of course, the extremely superficial similarity with that, with, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, with Floyd murdered by police, means that it's been taken up as this sort of White Lives Matter moment in British politics and has been the main topic of conversation throughout last week and going into this one.
Mm. And I know that Nowak's family said they didn't want Henry's murder to be used to create further hatred, division or tension, which is quite different to Nigel Farage's response.
Yeah, because he couldn't give a damn about them. I mean, Nigel Farage just absolutely could not give a damn about that family or what their stated preferences were. And in fact, you know, the same thing goes for J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance did exactly the same thing in the US. Elon Musk did exactly the same thing. They always finish it by going, "Oh, you know, our hearts with this family." And then they have extra. But when it actually comes to what the family specifically asked for, That's a hindrance. It prevents them from exploiting the situation for their own gain. So instead of not politicizing it, instead of saying that it's not about race, as Mark Nowak, Henry Nowak's father, asked for, Farage came out the next day and said white people are treated worse than all other people. I mean, just a statement that is so utterly preposterous. I mean, the complete inversion of the truth. And then cold hard fury, basically encouraging mob violence. I mean, not really a million miles away from incitement to a race riot. And he sort of got what he wanted. I mean, you know, these worst examples of humanity turned up in Southampton that evening, basically far right, lagered up thugs, led by Tommy Robinson, a former football hooligan who now coordinates many of these actions, and tried to reach the house that had the family of the assailant there. I mean, God knows what they would have done if they'd actually managed it, but the police managed to stop it from taking place. So not only do they, I mean, is Nigel Farage showing complete contempt, really, for the wishes of the family, but also at this point, like, we have to be clear, this is exactly what he did in the summer riots in 2024. It's precisely the same thing. Something's being kept from us about these murders. Something's very fishy here. We need to go out and express our anger. He is not just contemptuous towards the families. He is a threat to national security, where he sees a potential of creating race riots, of creating disorder on the streets and attacks on the police in order to fulfill his ideology. He will take it. And that is what he did this time, just the same way that he did last time.
And these sorts of domestic issues become international issues very quickly. As we know, you mentioned J.D. Vance and Elon Musk. Pete Hegseth has also bought in. Just remind us how each of those three have contributed to this.
Well, in every case, just by fulfilling the narrative, it's essentially, you know, Europe in general, but Britain specifically has been invaded. They don't know where. I mean, Hegseth didn't even bother using the word immigration because he doesn't have to anymore. Once they use the word invasion, I think everyone knows what they're talking about. Their ideology is that Europe is going undergoing some kind of civilizational erasure by virtue of mixture. Of course, by the way, it's worth remembering and just trying to keep your head about you with this stuff that what they're talking about is a kind of social homogeneity. You know, their hatred is not just for immigration. It is for racial diversity, for cultural diversity. That's what they're saying. Their view of civilizational erasure is simply diversity. Now, Europe is basically exactly the same as the US in terms of diversity. That is what it is. That is what it has been for some time. That is certainly what Britain is and very much what London is. And yet the push, that far right push coming from Washington, always has that same messaging, the same one that Farage has, the same one that Elon Musk has. So they have all seized on this case, you know, as an example of the victimization of white people and as a bit of sort of evocative video that they can spread online. They have largely failed. I mean, you really do struggle in Britain, unlike the US, to find a racialized form of politics. And in fact, I mean, people are very, you know, they'll be very tough on immigration, they'll want reductions, but people get really quite uncomfortable when you start using racial terms. There's no history, really, of doing that since the 60s or 70s in the UK. And there's very strong social, moral norms against the use of racial rhetoric. So actually, if there is a good side to what has taken place here, it's that it's been, I think, quite unhelpful for Nigel Farage. He went over the wrong side of the sort of Overton window. He moved just a bit beyond respectable public opinion. And people started to look at him. You can see a little bit of impact in the by-election polls, actually, the last couple of days. People started to look at him and going, like, hang on a minute, just how extreme are you really? Because you're starting to sound much more extreme than you've claimed to be.
Tracy Holmes filling in for David Marr, and I'm speaking to our UK commentator Ian Dunt, and who is a columnist also with iNews. Ian, how has the government then been handling this situation? Because Keir Starmer is battling this issue on multiple fronts.
I mean, they're so cautious and petrified that typifies pretty much all of their responses to these kinds of cultural matters. The depressing thing is, Kemi Badenoch, the leader of the Conservative Party, has generally shown no ability to distinguish herself from the far right and former Nigel Farage. So she'll move what should be a centre-right party and a fiscally conservative party, but a respectable one, over to the far right. Here, she did put clear blue water between her relationship with Nigel Farage. She said Nigel Farage was wrong to say what he said. However, she then basically took on a position that even a few years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, would have been considered really quite conservative and right-wing, which is that there should be basically racial blindness in policing and in institutions. There should be no attempt to correct for historic injustice. We should have no diversity and inclusion programs within the police, within sort of courts, within cultural bodies. We should just pretend that racism has already been ended when anyone can tell you that it has not. So essentially, I mean, she did literally say, I don't believe in Black Lives Matter and I don't believe in White Lives Matter. You know, can't we all just get along? What's incredible about that is the government's position is now essentially hers. I mean, the Labour government seems to say, well, look, we're going to start looking at some of this diversity and inclusion training in the police. We're going to start getting rid of it. They have sort of accepted the idea, baseless though it is, on the basis of this one instance, that actually something needs to change in the way that we're going to conduct race relations in the police force, which is her idea. So the Labour government's, obviously it's against riots, obviously it's very critical of Farage, but it has moved over to what in 2021 during Black Lives Matter would have been considered a very conservative point of view, to say actually black people don't really face racism, police forces are absolutely fine, they've been cured of all this, we don't really need to do anything about it. That would have been considered very conservative. That is now the position of the Conservative Party, which it sort of always was. But what's telling is that Labour has now moved over to that position too. So although there's a kickback against the more extreme rhetoric, the fundamental story of Britain right now, the rightward drift from the left moving to the right, the centre moving to the right, and then the centre-right moving to the far right, that fundamental process is still taking place.
Seems to be spreading right around the world. There have been significant attacks against the Sikh community. Have any of those been linked to the Nowak case?
No, not directly. But, you know, this is exactly the thing. When I said earlier, look at the cases that we choose to highlight, look at the crime stories that we choose to turn into politics stories. Mm. At the end of last year, there were assaults, in a series of assaults and sexual assaults, physical assaults and sexual assaults in the Midlands area against Sikhs. Now, two Sikh women were raped, one of whom the assailant clearly thought she was Muslim because she was shouting Islamophobic abuse. But two Sikh women were raped in the course of a very short period of time. Two elderly Sikh taxi drivers were taken out of their cars and beaten up outside of a train station. Nobody knows about this story. Like, nobody heard about it. There was almost no coverage of it at all. We didn't choose to say at that point, as we could have done, that these attacks show the absolute poison that far-right rhetoric is having in Britain. Like, the absolute need to socially and morally and politically ostracize those who state this kind of stuff, that the impact of the politics of reform, of the new politics of the Conservative Party, of this daily seeping anti-immigrant rhetoric is leading to attacks against Sikh people. No, those were just crime stories. Those weren't politics stories. It's only suddenly now that it has, that the crime story happens to have a narrative that is useful to reform, that we suddenly treat it like it's a great moment of national debate and national emergency that needs to be discussed in policy terms and lead to fundamental institutional changes in the police. I mean, it is really extraordinary. So you're quite right. I mean, these things are happening all the time, but they are not elevated to that important journalistic position of politics. They're just kept right down there as these arbitrary moments of crime.
So tell us about this. Tony Blair joined the critiques of the Starmer government, saying Labour has no coherent plan and that Britain risks becoming marooned on an island of irrelevance. Are people inside Labour paying attention to him?
No, not really, funnily enough. I mean, the journalists paid a lot of attention to him. I mean, he dominated the news for days on end. But actually in Labour, there was just this sort of sense of like, well, you just sound completely irrelevant, really. Like, it's weird. It's a funny thing to say, but you know who he most sounded like? He sounded most like Jeremy Corbyn. The trade unionists that Tony Blair used to attack when he became Labour leader. These sort of ideologues who just couldn't change their political views because even though the evidence had changed in front of them, who were just set in stone over 30 years. That's exactly what trade unionists were like when he took over in the 90s, still stuck in the 1970s. And that's what he sounds like now. Like, he would, you know, he would talk about this kind of form of centrism he couldn't define. He would say, well, look, the most important thing is we've got to stay close to the United States. We've got to realize they're our allies and stop trying to pull away from them. And you sort of think, like, are you really incapable of seeing how the United States has changed between your time and now? Like, are you really unaware of the fact that Donald Trump lambasts our prime minister on a daily basis and, you know, personally insults him? Do you really consider that to be a viable security partner for us? So he just seemed like, someone who'd been on a desert island from 1998, who'd been found and updated their politics in any way. So everyone sort of, just in Labour, they just kind of ignored him. The other parties, the Tories, Reform, they loved it because they got to attack Labour using Tony Blair stuff. But that doesn't really have much impact because the public think very unfavorably of him. Within Labour, he was just sort of treated like a bit of a legacy of the past, really, which is exactly what he sounded like.
And I guess, the takeaway from this whole story is that the more we hear it reported in these particular ways, in these particular frameworks, the more normalised it becomes. And as you say, the swing then continues to go towards the right. I'm sorry we're out of time because I could continue talking for much longer. Ian Dunt, columnist with iNews, co-host of the Origin Story podcast. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you very much indeed.